Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, as they say, let's get started. Good evening, everyone. Tonight we have a very busy program. We have Anna Maria Manalo in the house. And Anna Maria is a author. She has authored, probably more than three books, writing her fourth as we speak. Haunted Heirlooms is her most current. And she has two other books involving true accounts of people's paranormal stories as well as her own. She also has a documentary about a young lady and what she experienced back in the day of World War II. Anna is a top-rated bookseller, and you can find her information on Amazon. So without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to my guest, Anna Maria Manalo.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you, Dr. Schutz. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I am very excited to have you on the show today. Anna has a lot of experience. She's a screenwriter. She's written three books. Or have you written more, Anna? Correct me right now on that.
Well, I began as a scriptwriter back in 2009, and under that title, I have written about 11 screenplays, and okay. At the time, I was involved in doing supernatural as well as sci-fi genres.
Wow.
And then I started writing books about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Some are actually, based on some of the screenplays that I wrote. Some of the screenplays are nonfiction, actually, because I did a stint as a MUFON investigator back in the day, in my salad days. Okay. But for the past, this past year, I've written three, or year and a half. One is a second edition called Portal. The other one is actually what they call a creative nonfiction novel. Most people confuse it. When they think novel, they think it has to be fiction. But this is actually one that is based on different kinds of events surrounding a woman who at the time started, as a child in Germany when she's about 3 years old. Wow. She is, as of this writing, she's 93. Oh. But I write exclusively supernatural now, and a lot of my stories are interviews from people. Mm. The current one being probably the most intensive because I had to interview several people mm-hmm. to put together the five stories that are in the book.
Well, let me jump in and let me just quickly relay the titles of these three books that we're going to conquer today on this interview. Portal, A Lifetime of Paranormal Experiences. That'll be very interesting. That'll give us our start. We'll talk just a little bit about the way, is it called The Way Through the Woods? And then also her new release, Haunted Heirloom. So I'm really excited about all of them, but I think the last one's going to be very intriguing to our listeners and our viewers. So why don't we just delve into your humble beginnings to start out with? Because everybody always wants to know, well, how did they fall into this, or did they have experiences when they were younger and that's what brought them to this point? What can you share, Anna, with us about where this all began for you?
Well, that's a long story for me, Kelly. I actually was born and raised in a suburb of Manila in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. In that setting, it was pretty much a new neighborhood in the sense that right after World War II, there were a lot of homes that were built. Mm-hmm. My grandparents built a home that happened to be on land where Japanese soldiers had passed away, tragically. No one knew, because at the time the developers were busy just selling pieces of land and people were building homes on it. I ended up living in an intensely haunted neighborhood, mm-hmm. not just the house that I was born and raised in, but a haunted neighborhood. Wow. Portal is about the first 24 chapters of the book. I concentrated on a family that lived across the street from me, mm-hmm. because I grew up with the young girl. I was technically really very close in age to her. So all these things that I heard about, I was too young to absorb. And a lot of the hauntings I was shielded from, if that's possible. Mm. And you know, that's almost impossible because I end up being an experiencer.
Right.
And that's where my first person, feelings about all these happenings mm-hmm. came from.
Right.
That gave me the impetus to record them later on, to go back to that country, which I did several times, and interview the people. Some of them are still living in that neighborhood. And I'll tell the audience at this point, it's called San Juan.
San Juan
at the time was pretty much just a hamlet, a very small, peaceful neighborhood, peaceful in the sense that not too many traffic, you know, a lot of foot traffic, but not much car traffic went through. And in the evenings is when these types of occurrences, apparitions, infestations happened. So I recorded that in my first book and then moved on to my career as a field investigator for MUFON, where I shared cases that came across my way. So that's how I began.
Interesting. Let's go back to the book Portal for a moment, if we can. Can you share with us a couple of interesting stories? Now, you know, when I talk with people, I usually, I've had experiences over in Europe, and I've had experiences, of course, here in the States. And so people always want to kind of compare. Well, what was the haunting like over there? What was the haunting like here, or whatever? And when we talk about the experiences that you're going through on this land that had so many people buried, or gentlemen buried, probably females buried too, what kind of experiences were happening there?
They were very varied, but there is one in particular that I'm going to home in on. And I'm glad you're seated, because a lot of people probably have wondered how intense the hauntings are.
Yeah.
For this particular family, it started very early in the early 60s. It involved a gentleman and a young woman who married in their early 20s and moved into an apartment. Mm-hmm. And we're talking probably about three blocks from the neighborhood that I myself was raised in. Mm-hmm. They rented an apartment that was brand new, but it ended up facing a river that had a whole line of trees. And a being started manifesting. And I'll tell you about commonalities later on.
Yeah.
There's a being that was manifesting coming through the tree. And the gentleman involved happened to be a writer. Mm-hmm. He would spend his days writing in his office, taking a break, and then coming back. And in the evenings, that's when these apparitions occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a creature, if you recall Mothman, the movie mm-hmm. with Richard Gere. Mm-hmm. This creature is remarkably, from the description of the people that I interviewed, very similar. So it had the visage of something that looked like a goat.
Yeah.
It had the eyes of something that looked like a cow, if you could think of that, and it was yellow. Okay. And then it had the suggestion of a goatee. But the most alarming part about this vision is the wingspan that goes six yeah. feet across like a bat.
Yeah.
And it was actually hanging on the outside window of this couple.
Oh.
So there's a commonality with this creature. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have interpretations, varied interpretations. They call it Mothman, as in an actual flesh and blood creature. I think it was the suggestion at Point Pleasant in the Philippines, where this was seen in the little town of Little Baguio, which is a little hamlet right next to San Juan. The interpretation of the people there, because they're 99% Roman Catholic, was it was demonic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm very open as to what it could be. It could also be something called a thought form, or what they call a tulpa.
Right.
So I don't know that it's a thought form. I do know that the woman who has shared me the information in detail, who happens to be the wife of the gentleman who was being infested, told me that she finally caught it after several months of it haunting the house. She reached for a cross, which was in the room. She entered the room at twilight and saw it staring down at her husband, who was then bowed down, trying to avoid making eye contact with it.
Mm-hmm.
This cross that was on the wall, she went over and she held it towards the creature. Mm-hmm. And the creature, just like a vampire, took one of its wings and covered its own eyes and then started receding down towards the first floor. The room was on the second floor. And she said that her recollection from it was that it was about 9 feet high, which spanned the entire top of the window, and the wings extended past the windows.
Question.
Yes.
What was the attraction? Did you ever find out what the attraction was to that particular family? Because why, or was it doing this on many different windows, but this is the one that just so happens to have noticed it? Did you ever find out anything about that?
I did go back. I did interview family members who did not live with her. Mm. But there were people to the right and the left of her. This was a townhouse unit that had six different units, and it was in the center. So you would think intuitively someone else must have seen it,
right.
But no one has.
Hmm.
So my personal opinion
hmm.
is that the gentleman in question was severely depressed.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I think that emotion has a lot to do with it. We project how we feel
okay.
to a multidimensional environment. You and I are sitting here in three dimensions. We're only privy to part and parcel of a universe that is much larger.
A couple thoughts for you here. I'm going to put a twist on this, and I'm going to see what your thoughts are.
Okay.
So first story, my own. Let's see. I can't remember the date anymore, because when you write about it, you just kind of forget about it because you don't want to remember this stuff, but you might have heard about these bridge collapses. And I was on the Minneapolis bridge the night before it collapsed a few years back. And what makes that so odd is that it was under construction, so people can also blame it on maybe faulty or something that was why they're reconstructing whatever they're doing. But when I was on the bridge, it was during rush hour time. And there was nobody on the bridge but me. And when I drove over the bridge, I had a very creepy, eerie feeling. And I'm an empath, sensitive, intuitive. And I said, what's going on here? This is very bizarre. It's almost like I'm going into a different time zone, because this bridge should be full of people and it's rush hour and I'm the only one on the bridge. Well, it collapsed, obviously, the next day. And of course, that had me all, you know, nervous and all that. But someone had claimed, they claimed this, I cannot, you know, validate it, that mm-hmm. they saw a Mothman type thing fly from underneath the bridge at some point in time, just prior to it collapsing. So do you think that there's any difference with the types of Mothmans that are reported and as predictors of potential tragic events, or what are your thoughts about that?
I think that for the most part, we have a lot of creatures around us that know more than we do, mm-hmm. that have the ability to see things into the future. Mm-hmm. Whether they're harbingers or they're there to attempt to forewarn us, mm-hmm. I don't know. I tend to go by how they make me feel. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about being an empath, I applaud you, because there's not many people on the planet right now that are empaths. Mm-hmm. So you hold a special place in reality. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that when I actually enter these places, and I don't enter them often, or when I experience them, if I sense a heaviness or a malevolence, mm-hmm. then whatever entity is around me, I think, is probably bringing it on.
Right.
But if I sense something, like recently in the past 2 months, I've been seeing the clock and it keeps repeating. Mm. 1:11, 2:11, I mean, 2:22, 3:33.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of presence, because it comes with a levity, a sense of... not to quote someone else's book, but an incredible lightness of being.
Yeah.
So whatever it is that's forewarning us, it comes from two realms. I think the one you tapped into was more your own precognition, mm-hmm. your own ability to sense something that's negative,
yeah.
Which is obviously separate mm-hmm. from the sighting of the Mothman. Yeah. I tend to think of the Mothman as something very evil, something negative. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's naturally created by people and the way people think. Mm-hmm. I think it's something separate from another realm altogether.
Let's move this into your second book here, The Way Through the Woods. And tell us a little bit about that story that you've written in that book.
Of the three that I've written, this book I'm really very proud of. And I say that because I always wanted to catch the full flavor of a human being mm-hmm. In their multidimensionality. Mm-hmm. And I think I caught that for Krista, who is the heroine in this book. Okay. This fell on my lap, so to speak, this particular book, in the sense that it was begging to be written when I met this elderly lady. Mm-hmm. Of all places, at a party. First of all, she almost fell into me, literally, as mm-hmm. she was trying to make her way onto the table, mm-hmm. Onto a chair right next to me. It was a party for probably about 35, 40 people. Mm-hmm. And it was a celebration. And I didn't know her. I'd never met her before. In the course of the evening, she found out that I was, you know, looking for material to write things. I just... you know, gotten my second edition of my book, mm-hmm. Signed on with a publisher. And she said, you might want to hear about my story, because I think it would fit well with what you write, the types of things that you write. And she started telling me, and I was just really, Kelly, I was just glued to my seat as she mm-hmm. told me about this. And I thought, this is a book. I have to write her story. So that's what I did. What I did was I got her phone number, contacted her several times, got her permission. And what you see in the book is basically what she went through as a child in Germany. Mm-hmm. And she was with parents who were German, who were opposed to the Nazi regime. Mm-hmm. And in the final analysis, got caught in the middle, and the family was torn asunder. Mm-hmm. What makes this distinctively different from the other books out there that have to do with Nazi and, you know, all the Holocaust things, mm-hmm. is this is a child who escaped through the woods, mm-hmm. through the Bavarian forests, mm-hmm. and discovered some very unearthly entities because of all the tragedies that have happened in the German woods, because of all the fatalities, the massacres that happened. She happened upon them personally.
Tell me a little bit about what kinds of things she, if you can, what she discovered along her way. Obviously, she's already traumatized. Okay, let's just start with that. She's trying to survive here, and now she's stumbling upon things. Can you share with us maybe just a snippet of some of the things that she talked about that she discovered?
Well, because the family was torn asunder, mm-hmm. I won't give away, as you said, I won't do any spoilers.
Yeah.
I can tell you one particular scene I do recall writing, and this is about her father, who was in quest of looking for her. As she was trying to go up north, to go through the forest to get to him, because she was trying to go under cover of night. He himself had escaped an army installation up north where he was enlisted forcibly as a tailor. Mm-hmm. So by escaping that, he started to make his way down south, mm-hmm. finding some files, you know, recorded of where she might have gone to live with a Gestapo woman.
Mm, okay.
So as he was escaping one evening, he was just so exhausted. He was lying on a piece of rock or something that he had with him. I think it was a messenger bag at the time. And then he woke up hearing on a ridge some activity. So he climbs up on the ridge, mm-hmm. and through the branches of the trees sees a line of soldiers shooting at civilians. Mm-hmm. Their bodies fall into the river. Right. One of the soldiers, who happened to be just a few yards from him in that lineup, was a very young man. Mm-hmm. He sees the young man running towards him, and for a second, this gentleman thought he had seen him, right. and the man was armed. But no, as soon as he stopped just a few yards from him, mm-hmm. the gentleman took out a shotgun and shot himself in the head.
Hmm.
Blood jettisoned all over.
Yeah.
Hit Krista's father all over his clothing.
Yeah.
Pieces of, not to be gory, pieces of brain matter and everything else.
Hmm.
So, of course, he's now stunned and shocked. He sees right. this man fall dead.
Right.
He falls and rolls off the ridge.
Hmm.
And then he awakens the next morning. He fainted.
Mm-hmm.
And then realized what he had experienced the mm-hmm. night before.
Mm-hmm.
But then he stands up and he looks down, and his shirt is completely clean, mm-hmm. other than dirt stains and grass stains from his walking through the woods. There was no blood. There was no brain matter. He walks up again to investigate whether he was hallucinating or not. And he looks all over. There's nothing on the river that he can see. There is nobody in front of him.
Hmm.
So he separates the trees. He goes through the clumps of trees and comes out to the open ground.
Mm-hmm.
And he does see one little blood-stained Nazi pin that this kid was wearing on his lapel.
Interesting. And mysterious, too. I'm just sitting here right now trying to process the story, and I'm a very visual person, so I can see pictures moving through my head as people tell their stories, and I can't even begin to process that one. So, Anna, talk to us a little bit. Speaking of, I mean, to me, it's like, is that a missing time issue? But I would like to talk a little bit about what you might know about disappearances, missing time, anything like that. Have you talked to anybody who have given you some personal accounts about either of those, and what can you share with us about that?
That would go back to my days when I was a MUFON investigator.
Okay.
And I was traveling a lot because of it, interviewing a lot of people and trying to hold a full-time job at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I didn't stay with them very long because I actually got called into HR about what I was doing since I was working at a school. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that came out of my investigator days was that I ended up in a pilot show. Which didn't go on the air. It was a pilot of 3 episodes. I was in one of them, you know, just basically a vignette. Mm-hmm. But because it aired Thanksgiving, locals were approaching me. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories that I harvested from that was a gentleman who I met right outside a wine store.
Oh, so what a good place to have a story, right?
I know. And as I was walking out of the wine store, he stopped me. I ended up sitting on a bench. I ended up taking out a notebook, which I carried with me a lot of times during that time. And he told me about a story of him and a friend of his actually driving home and crossing in twilight a bridge.
Okay.
As they were approaching the bridge, they noticed there was a van on the bridge that was kind of like moving at about 5 miles an hour.
Slow. Mm-hmm.
So picture this. Basically, they're trying to cross. This van is obstructing their way.
Yeah.
So he was carpooling with a friend, and the friend who was driving said, why don't we pause here for a minute? Can you get out and find out what's going on with that van? Because we got to get through. So he then walks over to the van on foot and notices that the driver's side door is wide open.
On the bridge.
He noticed that the, you know, the sliding door was also open, but there was no one inside.
But the car was moving,
it was as if it was just idling on neutral.
Okay, gotcha. And just kind of creeping, if it was had any motion at all, or just sitting there.
Kind of like just creeping along,
yeah, really slow.
So he ran to the other side, looking around for people who might have just forgotten to put it on park.
Right.
The other side was also wide open. The passenger door was open. So he peered in, and the car was on drive.
Oh,
the van was on drive. So he came back to the driver. They both exited their car at that point. He gets in, puts the car on park, and they're yelling all over the place. There was no one.
Yeah.
They got this very creepy feeling that they were being watched.
Yeah.
They looked over, nothing on the either side of the river. They ran back to the car, and you know how people are. They're afraid at this point.
Yeah.
Ran back into the car, and they went into a watering hole that was on the same side of the river. We're talking about 2 different states here.
Yeah.
This is where it gets very strange, Kelly. Yeah. They park right in the middle of an extremely busy parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Where people are going in to eat dinner or have a few drinks.
Mm-hmm.
They walk over to the front door. He turns to his friend and says, wait a minute, I want to show you a baby picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I dropped it. I must have left it in your car. And he says, go and get it.
Mm-hmm.
He then dashes back to the car.
Yeah.
Ed goes in and he's looking for the picture.
Mm-hmm.
He finds it.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out, slams the door. Suddenly, there's nobody in the parking lot, and it's pitch dark.
Huh. And it was crowded before.
And the guy walks up. He says, what took you so long? What took you so long? You said you were just getting a picture.
Hmm.
He said, I've been wondering what's going on. People have left. He said, wait a minute. What time is it? They lost 2 hours.
Wow.
The guy had gone in to get a drink. Wondering what happened to his friend. He comes out, people were already leaving, and then there's his friend.
Now that's, so expand on that with maybe your perspective of what you think, other than missing time, obviously, happened there. Because this is the 2nd or 3rd time I've heard of someone mention, I've been gone for about 2 hours. Actually, you're the third person I've heard a story very similar to this. Not like that, but in a different story, but gone for 2 hours. So what went on then? Tell me a little bit more about what you know now about that.
Well, what I do think it could be,
yeah,
is that whatever they had seen in the van,
okay,
or whatever was there that was watching them at the time when they were examining the van, yeah, must have followed them, because we're talking probably a couple of miles down the, yeah, road.
Okay.
So it followed them, and what it did to the people in the van, somehow it plucked him out. It sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy. I've heard of people getting lost in national parks. I've heard of people, mm-hmm, just getting plucked out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Travis Walton and all that kind of stuff that's been happening. And this is pretty recent.
Yeah. Oh, this is recent?
2009. Yeah, 2009. To me, I think that's pretty recent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He had no explanation. He really didn't understand what was going on.
Hmm.
The other gentleman had no explanation. They did not tell any of their coworkers about what happened.
Anna, what happened to the van?
Well, they came back. The van was gone, and they have no idea what happened.
Plucked in the air, probably, too.
Plucked in the air, and then they went right through, and then obviously at this point, he was speeding to just try to get home.
Yeah, because you know how people are. Well, they'll speed, and if you're going, you know, the regular speed limit anyway, but that's very interesting. It just reminds me of a story of someone had told me, actually a couple of years ago, that happened probably within the last 5-6 years of they're just walking out of their apartment or their townhome or something like that, and they were a very old-fashioned car approached and parked in that person's parking space or right next to it, something like that, enough to cause them to wonder what's going on here. And this gal said that she walked out of the door, and she saw this old-fashioned car pull up. So the very first thing people think about in this day and age is, oh, there must be a car show going on, or, oh, they must be visiting a friend or whatever. So you don't think anything of it because you see this stuff on the road all the time, okay?
Vintage, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she approaches the vehicle, and there's an older man in there. And she says, he says, I have a question. I'm lost or something like that. So, of course, she's thinking, well, all I have to do is give him some directions to whatever. But then all of a sudden, it was the question that he asked. And I can't remember what it was, but it was so odd. It was like a question that is commonly known, you know. And so it's like, this is bizarre. Like, who am I talking to? Someone from the Twilight Zone? You know, if you remember that movie.
Yeah.
And she thought, no, this is just really weird. And she, I think she said she turned around and started walking back to her apartment and just thought, or town home, and thought, this is strange. And then she turned around, and then of course the car was gone. But the thing is that she said it was weird because it was like an actual human, an older man, asking a very bizarre question, but something that anybody, a very common question that anybody could answer. It wasn't just something like, and then, of course, most people will say, well, maybe it was an older man who had Alzheimer's or something like that, and they just started, they didn't know what they were saying or something like that. She says, no, that wasn't this case at all. This was a case of like walking into almost another dimension and seeing something, you know, and then walking right back through it again. So you mentioned earlier, Anna, a little bit about, yeah, these 411 disappearances in these state parks. Did you have any stories from anyone about any of those types of experiences?
No, although I do love reading about them, I have to say I have not encountered anyone in that particular realm. I know they're pretty prevalent. I've read a number of books about them, and the only thing I could come up with is that somehow these people have entered Terre in reality. They either got moved to a totally different dimension, or maybe they're even moved into the future. And your story to me tells me this gentleman probably is missing in an earlier time frame, and suddenly he's there in modern day and has no idea how he got there.
Yeah, interesting. I was just listening to a program last night. I don't know if you're familiar with Dave Scott from Spaced Out Radio, and they were bringing up a recent article, actually, that just happened regarding a young boy who is around 3 years old. You know, of course, the age where they really can't express words to a level that makes much sense sometimes. And that the kid was playing out in the yard with their dog and just all of a sudden went missing. And so he was showing the article on the, I think it was in the New York Times. And he was showing the article and the dialogue. But long story short, the kid was gone for like maybe 2 days or something like that. And when the kid was found, and of course it was in the elements in Montana recently, where very cold, you know, hypothermia, the whole 10 yards, shouldn't have been able to have survived anything. Animals, wild, should have been eaten, you know, that kind of thing. Somehow the kid, I don't know where they found him, but they found him. And then the best way that the kid could describe this was that a big teddy bear took care of him for a couple of days. Now, yeah, that was the best way he could describe it as a three-year-old. And he was returned, and I know, isn't that something? And so the questions came up in that interview about, well, why didn't the dog react and all that? And I learned something new. I learned that a lot of times, a lot of these tracking dogs don't want to go after Bigfoot or Sasquatch or however you want to refer to them. Mm-hmm. For some reason, they're very scared of them. And that when the child was abducted, taken, or airlifted into whatever, you know, have you ever heard of anything like that before? Does that sound a little unbelievable in your mind? What's your perspective on that?
I don't know that I would call that unbelievable. I think that's incredibly plausible.
Yeah.
There's been so many accounts, and a gentleman named David Politis, whom I'm sure you've heard of, mm-hmm. has talked about how, you know, children don't behave this way. They don't travel for miles on foot and remain intact. They usually roll up into a ball, especially at that age of three. And then you find them where they are, crying and huddled.
Right.
So the fact that he interpreted in his head, probably for his own psychological safety and comfort, was that it was a big teddy bear. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously Bigfoot.
Right.
The other piece about Bigfoot, and I had one account about Bigfoot in my first book, Portal.
Right.
And this doesn't entail a dog, but I do know that animals are terrified.
Yeah.
When he's about to be sighted by people, animals flee mm-hmm. from Bigfoot.
Yeah,
because this is someone, and in the realm of alpha, you've heard the term referring to dogs and other animals. Mm-hmm. Bigfoot is the alpha.
Yeah,
everybody bows to Bigfoot because he is the king of the forest, and he supersedes everybody else.
Yeah.
So, of course, all the animals are afraid of him because he pretty much has control over the forest, and you could tell he does.
Yeah.
The one account I have involves a woman, and once again, it's in a remote location where there's extensive forests, and it wants to feed. One of the things about Bigfoot is that if you want to humor them, then I wouldn't humor him, because that's one thing I wouldn't want to be near, is to feed him.
Yeah.
And she unwittingly did, unwittingly drawing him out of the forest. So... in the case of this particular witness, she moved out. I mean, she left the house she was renting.
Well, was Bigfoot continually coming back for food because she started feeding this thing?
Well, I don't know that it was something she designed to do. I think it was lured by food and the smells of popcorn in this case.
Oh.
The farmer across the street from her, who was the only neighbor she had, she was telling him, you know, that there was a bear that was running on 2 feet coming from your barn into the forest. And the farmer said, that's not a bear. Bears don't run on 2 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. They amble. And after that, because she lived alone and, you know, the creature was huge, she figured, hey, it's a safety issue.
Yeah. Well, here's one. Here's another one I can add to that story on about living. Well, two. I'm gonna add two to that. So I heard a story on one of the programs recently. They're talking about how Bigfoot was approaching. Someone had lived remotely out in a forest in their cabin, and you know, which was of course their full-time house, and they had noticed that Bigfoot was coming out of this forest and approaching their cabin more and more every day. And then so one day the Bigfoot was approaching the front door. And so the gentleman inside the house got his shotgun. And as soon as the Bigfoot was probably within, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 feet of the front door, because it was obvious that it was not going to stop. It was still going to approach. He shot at Bigfoot, and as soon as he shot at Bigfoot, it disappeared. Oh. Poof, in midair. Poof. Didn't fall down, didn't die, wasn't lying there, wasn't decaying on, you know, because it was deceased. It went poof. And so if that doesn't make a person wonder a little bit about Bigfoot. And then, of course, I talked with a gal. I'm an artist, and she was telling me just recently, and then now Northern Minnesota usually has the sightings of some type of Bigfoot up here. But this mm-hmm. one was coming down from Northern Minnesota. And my manager was telling me just recently that she and her daughter went out just outside on the lawn and heard this extremely loud growl, you know, the whole 10 yards. And it was something that was obviously not recognizable and scared them both, because it was, you could just feel it in the pit of your stomach. And she says, I think we better go inside. I don't know what that was, but, you know, we're not going to sit around here. And she's also in a wooded area, you know, amongst the trees, but it's not in Northern Minnesota. It's a little bit up there, but it's almost as if these things are now, I don't know, making their way to various parts of wooded areas. You just never know where something will show up. So mm-hmm. that's interesting, Anna. So let's transition here a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about your new book, Haunted Heirlooms. And I want you to give us lots of good stuff here that at least you can share, because I want people to go out and buy the book and read it. And if you've got images in there, great. But tell us a little bit about what inspired you, first of all, to write Haunted Heirlooms.
Well, I'm an antique enthusiast. Mm-hmm. I started in my college years starting to collect little things like trinkets, and it went on from that to fine porcelain, and then eventually into furniture. Okay. The book actually opens with my own experience with a haunted piece of furniture, a wing chair.
Okay.
Which I was really pleasantly surprised. I got it at a flea market, mm-hmm. but the gentleman in question was selling some things that looked distinctively antique to me. Mm-hmm. So after verifying what it was, I was really surprised that it was only $36. Mm-hmm. I had a gentleman with me who was a college friend, and he threw it into his Beetle, and it ended up in my dorm room. Mm-hmm. And that's where the adventure begins.
Okay.
And because of that, not that I was discouraged, in short order, without a spoiler, I had to get rid of this wing chair. Mm-hmm. which was creating a lot of activity in the dorm. Mm-hmm. The dorm itself was an all-girls dorm in single rooms. Mm-hmm. The other side of it happened to be a cloister for nuns.
Okay.
And when the nuns started to get affected, I felt that I really needed to get rid of the wing chair.
Hmm.
It moved on from there to trips to New York City. Mm-hmm. And surrounding New England towns. I originally lived in Connecticut at the time, and I went to college in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just drive or go with friends, and we went all the way up to the state of Maine. And in the process, these people became longtime dealers that I dealt with. Mm-hmm. Some of them opened up their hearts to me, and some of them agreed with permission to share their stories. Mm-hmm. So that's where these five stories come from. These are actual antique dealers, mm-hmm. Who in their heyday encountered something that they never thought they would have to deal and grapple with.
Interesting.
But it is a fast read. It's terrifying. And I have to forewarn you that, though the people are real in there, the objects themselves are actually haunted objects, as the title implies. And for those who like to buy antiques, just be careful of what you get and what you bring into your home.
Yeah, let's talk a little. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the things that you can talk about, or even in general, about what types of energies is it people always have brought up all the time. Is it the energy of the person, like the oils from their hands, or the energy from the person touching it a lot that embeds itself into the item? Is it somebody who had a lot of unsettled energy at the time that was creating the item? Where do you think this haunted essence, what do you think it is, or where do you think it comes from? Any ideas on your thoughts on that?
Well, I classify them into two things. One is an object where the occupant had died suddenly,
yeah,
or in tragic circumstances, mm-hmm. and has not let go of their desire,
yeah,
for material things.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that when we pass, the only thing we take with us, not to be trite, is the love in our hearts and the people who passed on with us.
Yeah.
We can't really take our house with us. We can't really take the lamp that's here on my desk.
Right.
But for some people, it is tragic to them, and they're just not ready to let go.
Right.
So I see one being actually with an apparition or with an actual spirit following the object of desire, as I would call it, and wanting to remain attached to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what they are. They're attached. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other kind. There's the kind where in life, and a concrete example of this that comes to mind is actually from a previous show, where I was shown a diamond that was owned by royalty that usually ends up in the crown of Queen Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to grapple with the name of the diamond, but you know, it is there. Somehow, when someone was alive and it was a woman, they imbued it with their own energy. In this case, it was a curse, mm-hmm. that they didn't want a male to be able to wear or carry this diamond. So for that reason, there's a negative energy that attaches itself to anyone who's male, hmm. when it is worn. Hmm. And tragic things happen to them, or misfortune happens to them. That's what I would call a cursed object. So whereas one is where you actually have the soul still following the object in three-dimensional earth while they're on a higher realm, you've got the other one where the person who's alive has imbued their energy onto an object. And when they passed on, the energy remains with the object and tends to, as for far of a better word, hexes whoever encounters it.
Interesting. So when someone's encountering these objects, do they have to touch them, or do they just have to be in the vicinity of them?
It really depends. I mean, in the first story that I told, it was about a woman who acquired an urn from a foreign country. And as soon as it was transported, wrapped in everything, packaged at her front door, activity started to happen. This was probably the most severe of the stories that I have on there, in the sense that it came what I would call a gorgon. I really don't know what it is, but it was larger than their Bernese Mountain Dog.
What are your thoughts about haunted dolls?
Well, obviously the most famous one is Annabelle.
Yeah.
I'm happy to say I've never encountered a haunted doll, and no one that I know of has encountered a haunted doll. It's interesting what ends up being.
If you ever go to Las Vegas and go to Zach Bagan's Haunted Museum, he's got a whole room of haunted dolls, and you know, they have no mercy on anybody. So, you know, the thing is, it's like, once again, it's that energy of being attached to some of these things that is very fascinating. It's kind of bizarre, kind of unusually bizarre too, because I love antique stores. I love them, but I have stopped buying things. And that's not to say people should stop buying things. Some things just have attachments on them that, and are you able to, Anna, recognize at all, you know, any kind of object that may have an energy to it that you think, or you're thinking, maybe I'll just leave this one here?
Funny that you asked that, because I have to say that after encountering that wing chair,
yeah,
I've learned to pay attention to my own gut feeling.
Yeah.
Because when I came across that, it was in broad daylight. It was sitting there at a flea market in open air. And I just got the sense, not so much from the chair, but the gentleman who was selling it.
Right.
That he was hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that lured me was that I could afford it, you know, being I was only a college student.
Right.
I didn't really think, you know, what is it that he's hiding, or, you know, I didn't go into analyzing his motives. I just figured I just wanted that wing chair.
Right.
So hindsight is 20/20. When you get a gut feeling and you get a heaviness, which I did, mm-hmm. I felt heavy even though the sun was shining. Don't approach it. Just walk away and go to something else.
Yeah.
Now I'm a little bit more tuned to it. There was an antique shop I went to, and it's closer to home over here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Obviously, I won't name it, but I walked in, and there was a room that had some really heavy furniture. Heavy as in they were probably made of walnut, mahogany, and things mm-hmm. like that.
Right.
But something repelled me from approaching them and getting close to them.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I took that as a cue.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times we ignore our gut feelings because we always think it's our imagination, or we're overreactive that day, or highly sensitive, or whatever. But I get that once in a while. And even if you approach that gentleman and would say, what's the story behind this chair, chances are likely, if he wants to just get rid of it, he's not going to tell you the story anyway. So, you know, especially if somebody passed away in it, or it was someone, he was disgruntled about something, or someone else was disgruntled about him, who knows, right? It's mm-hmm. the energy that does lie upon things. It is very interesting how that simple, even as small as a ring, can affect and cause havoc, you know, in people's homes. Very interesting stuff. Well, people need to go out and buy your books, all three of them. But tell us, Anna, a little bit about how people can get a hold of you and or how they can buy your books, and if you're going to go to any events or anything like that. Share with us some stuff, and I'll have it at the show notes, on the show notes at the end of this show.
Okay. So the fastest way to get a hold of me, if someone has a story that they want to tell, is Facebook. It's under my name /author,
okay.
Or they can follow me on Instagram. And obviously they can also follow me on Amazon, where all my three books are available.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a page. It's called The Sinister Archives.
Okay.
That comes with a storytelling podcast. I don't really guest people. Your job is very challenging. Mm-hmm. Mine is more, I read little stories, original true stories, based on my, you know, accounts with people that I've talked to, and some of them right out of my book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Sinister Archives page, and then under my name on Facebook, and again on Amazon.
Wonderful. Oh, how interesting. So when is book number four coming out?
Book number four, I'm supposed to complete by mid-September. And so shortly, hopefully before Halloween, it will be released.
Cool. Is it, do you have an inkling as to what type of book it is to give us all kind of a heads up here?
Sure. This book is based actually on a local investigator's stories. Mm-hmm. It's about a dwelling that he got involved in for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. John Curley is the investigator, and I got his permission so I can say his name. Mm-hmm. He's with the Harrisburg Paranormal Society. He's actually the founder and leader of the group. So the story revolves around an Airbnb that would not be renovated. And there's a lot of things that ended up happening to that building. And to this day, it stands undone and unfinished. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful building. It's got 3 stories high, some very beautiful rooms. It was built around 1750.
Wow. Wow. That'll be really fascinating. And are you telling us is it haunted? When you say stories,
yeah.
Any type of thriller in there, hauntings, that kind of thing? Is that?
Well, you've got a cross between Gettysburg, mm-hmm. and then you also have a cross between people who ended up in tragic situations. There was a woman who ended up somehow being held hostage mm-hmm. in that dwelling. Something happened up in the attic, and then something on the grounds keeps manifesting. And a lot of things that are happening there is all unresolved tragedies that no one knew about until these crewmen started coming in and started trying to, you know, fix the wallpaper, fix the rooms, anything that they have to do.
Yep. Disturbance of what used to be seems to be a big thing when things want to start all of a sudden coming out to play with us. So,
yes.
Anna, thank you. So very interesting, fast hour. Thank you so much for being, I'll have to touch base with you again when you get that fourth book out too, so we can delve into some of the interesting plots and things that are going on within those stories. So thank you for being on the show today.
And
of course, we wish you well. And again, come back and see us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah.
Just a side note, if you would like to see this interview in person, go to paraflix.com and go to my TV talk show, Disembodied Voices. And that would be www.paraflix.com. And what you would do is scroll down to the bottom. There's a 3-day free trial. And if you take advantage of that, I do have in the show notes a special code that you can take advantage of and sign up. It's $35 a year or $3.99 a month. And there are a lot of series on there, documentaries, talk shows. There's a few of those. Some other interesting things, spiritual, motivational, and just well-done programs. And so Anna and I, as well as many of the guests now, are going to be on this television show with me. And, of course, I will play what I can on the formats and the platforms that you currently hear on, many of the popular ones, Podomatic, also Para-X Radio Network. And again, I thank you so very much for listening and keep following me. I've got a lot of guests slotted to go forward until the end of the year. And I'm just very grateful and happy to have everyone aboard. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care, and until next time, be careful what you wish for. The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.